Conservatives are surging in the polls across the country. Not only are Pierre Poilievre's conservatives in firm majority territory, but even provincial conservative parties are becoming increasingly popular. Are we witnessing the end of woke socialist political rule in Canada? We'll talk about it and find out. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. This will be our only podcast of the week. We will not be doing Fake News Friday or Off the Record this week, as it is Good Friday on Friday, and we will be busy in church that day, not recording our usual program. So I hope you enjoy this podcast, and we will be back again next week after Easter. Please like this video if you enjoy our content. Don't forget to subscribe to the True North channel if you're new around here. If you enjoy the podcast and you're listening to it, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. And finally, head on over to our website, tnc.news, to sign up for a newsletter so you never miss a story. Okay, so we all know that the Justin Trudeau Liberals have seen their support absolutely collapse in recent months, basically ever since Pierre Poilievre became leader of the opposition and began to present a realistic and more compelling, frankly, alternative government to that of Justin Trudeau. Well, according to the latest polls, which were just released over the weekend, the Libs could potentially slip into third or possibly even fourth party status in the next election, whenever that may be held. So check out the latest numbers. This is from Abacus polling. This came out on March 24th, and basically during the period of March 16th to March 21st, the Abacus pollsters talked to 3,500 Canadians about who they would be voting for if an election were held today. They found that 41% of committed voters would vote Conservative. Liberals were down at 23%, the NDP at 19%, and the Bloc Québécois notably have surged up to 33% in Quebec, which shows a dramatic fall from the Liberals in that province. So you can see this nifty little graphic put up by our friends over at Canada Proud, and they project that the Conservatives would win an enormous 223 seats. But look who would come in second. According to this model, the Bloc would win 41 seats, only 39 for the Libs, NDP right behind at 37. So you could see a world where the Liberals are not the opposition party, that the Bloc Québécois may be the opposition party, and Jagmeet Singh is not too far behind. So really a huge, incredible shift. This represents, this isn't an outlier. This represents what a lot of polls have been finding. So if we look over at 338, which is a polling aggregator, they aggregate polls and models of various data. This is the latest update from March 24th. It also shows the Conservatives at 42% nationally, the Libs down at 25%, NDP at 19%. So no matter which poll you look at, no matter which survey you see, what we see is that Justin Trudeau and his Liberal Party continue to hit new lows. We see that Canadians are desperately waiting for an election so that we can tell the Trudeau Liberals exactly how we feel about them. So with all this in the background, cue the Liberals to come up with a scheme that personally enriches themselves while also potentially tries to tip the scales in the next election. So last Wednesday, we saw the Minister of Public Safety, Dominic LeBlanc, introduce potential changes to the Election Act. The main thing that they talked about was potentially moving the current election date from October 20th to October 25th. So as you know, Canada does not have set elections, and particularly when we're in a minority governing situation as we are in right now, an election could happen at any time. Jagmeet Singh, leader of the NDP, could wake up any morning, decide to grow a spine, and decide to deliver to Canadians what they want, which is an election. He could trigger an election anytime he wants. But Singh instead continues to prop up the Liberals. And as he does, there is a maximum term that this government can be in office. There is a law that says that there must be an election on the third Monday of October in the fourth calendar year following polling day of the last general election. So last election, of course, was in 2021, which means that the latest possible date for an election would be the third Monday in October in 2025, which is approximately 18 months from now. So why would the Liberals want to delay that vote by 1 week? Well, let's look at a recent report from True North. This is from our website from Sunday. Liberals eyeing new election date that coincides with MP pension qualifications. So Dominic LeBlanc claims that rescheduling the day to a week later is just to acknowledge the Hindu religious festival of Diwali, saying that it is a bill designed to strengthen Canada's democracy. Other changes, which are also worth noting, that it will expand the days for advanced voting and make it easier for mail-in ballots. So, of course, nothing these politicians has ever say is true. This has nothing to do with Diwali. It has nothing to do with strengthening our democracy. The idea of mail-in ballots and advanced polling, everyone knows that it does the exact opposite to strengthening our democracy. It makes our democracy easier to meddle with. Well, the real reason that the Libs want to push back the date by one single week is so that more Liberal MPs will qualify for a gold-plated, lifelong, taxpayer-funded pension. So let's read more from this True North article. It says, however, the rescheduling of Election Day also carries with it a significant caveat, which applies to certain MPs' pensions, depending on when they were voted in. So all MPs receive a pension after 6 years of service, meaning that any MP that was elected back in the 2019 election will hit that six-year threshold if the election is held after October 20th, 2025. Isn't that cute how that works out? So an election date of October 27th, just 7 days later, means that millions and millions more dollars in taxpayer-funded benefits will go to politicians. So isn't that neat? Isn't that wonderful how that all works out? So let's discuss polling. Let's discuss public opinion a little more. I am pleased to be joined today by my guest, Hamish Marshall. You know Hamish well around here. He's a partner at One Persuades, which is a government relations strategy firm based in Ontario. Back in 2019, he served as a Conservative Party's national campaign manager. In 2017, he led Andrew Scheer's winning leadership campaign. Prior to that, he worked for Stephen Harper as his manager of strategic planning and his pollster. And you will remember him well because during that 2021 federal election, Hamish worked here at True North as our in-house pollster. And we always really enjoyed his analysis and his insight into what's happening in Canada. So Hamish, welcome to the Canada's Welcome Show. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here again.
So let's start with the polls. Let's start with where Justin Trudeau is, where Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre is. What are your comments on these latest rounds of polls?
Well, I think I saw a desperate column by some sort of Liberal recently saying, well, we're now doing math that shows that Pierre has peaked. And while he's doing well, he can't possibly do any better. But I feel we saw things like that a few weeks ago, and the numbers keep going up. And we're now consistently seeing numbers in the low 40s, and really seeing the split between the NDP and the Liberals, which means that we should see very low numbers of Liberals and NDPers elected. The really stunning thing about this isn't just the collapse of the Liberals, which, you know, we kind of hope for and expect with what's been going on with the way they've been running the country. But what the incredible thing is actually how the NDP haven't profited. In the past, when the Liberals are dipping into the low 20s, the NDP are usually, you know, tied with them or maybe ahead somewhere in the mid 20s. They're picking up those votes. We're actually seeing, which is pretty incredible, is that Poilievre Conservatives are gaining votes not just from the Liberals, but also potential votes from the NDP. There's lots of blue-collar and traditional NDP voters who are taking a good long look at the Conservatives and liking what they see.
What is it that is appealing more and more to blue-collar workers?
I mean, I think it's the directness of his message. I think it's the authenticity. He is projecting very much that he understands and cares about their lives. The Liberal government has very much been focused on, you know, the fancy people, whereas Pierre, his message is very, very focused on how he's going to make life better for everyday Canadians. And you don't have to, try to buy an EV and live in downtown Toronto to do well in Pierre's Canada. So I think he's very much connecting with those voters, both in industrial places like Windsor or Thunder Bay, and in places like Thunder Bay, like Northern Ontario or Vancouver Island, where there's a whole chunk of blue collar workers that Poilievre is really appealing to.
Well, not to make it too personal, but I always found it really interesting that the sort of blue-collar left would still rally around an individual like Jagmeet Singh. I mean, it's almost like a satire when you see some of the things that Jagmeet Singh does. I mean, I think he has a Rolex watch collection. He drives a BMW. His wife posts images of her on Instagram wearing like $1,000 dresses. I think there was someone caught a picture of him shopping in Toronto a couple of weeks ago and he was carrying like a Versace shopping bag. I mean, I can't imagine how he would continue to have the support of blue collar people. I guess the only question I have is like, why did it take so long for them to notice that Jagmeet Singh is obviously not a champion of the working man? He's an elitist and a champagne socialist.
I think it's partly that, you know, voting habits are just that, they're often habits. People sort of say, well, I'm this with this party, and they generally stick with the party. Most people generally stick with the party unless they're sort of knocked hard out of that lane. So I think it's partly habit. I think it's people not paying that close attention to Mr. Singh. But I also think that conservatives had to have someone who directly appealed to those sort of voters. And, Pierre Poilievre has gone out of his way and gone after those voters in a direct way, and it's paying off big time.
So what do you think of the latest poll that shows that perhaps Justin Trudeau wouldn't even be the leader of the opposition if there were an election held today? What do you think will happen to the prime minister if he were to lose an election that badly? Will he stick around in office? Will he immediately resign? What do you think will happen?
You know, they won't be finished counting the ballots before he resigns, if it's anything like that. You know, Justin Trudeau is interested in being in one thing, and that's being prime minister. Well, actually, according to the interview he did a few weeks ago, and perhaps not even particularly interested in that. He's not interested in sticking around as leader of the opposition. He's done that. He did that, you know, as the leader of a third party 10 years ago, and he's not going to sign up for that again. He'll be gone very, 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 very quickly.
What did you think of that, by the way, that article where he said, I think that his spin doctor has tried to claim that the word he used, plot, doesn't mean boring. From the comments in our video when we talked about it, French-speaking people said that, no, it doesn't just mean boring. It means that you're bored because you believe the job is beneath you. What do you make of all that?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything sort of so tone deaf. I mean, how do you run again to be prime minister once you've given that impression that the job is beneath you, the job that can be quote unquote super boring? It's staggering. It is, you know, it's obviously not a job for everyone, but it is a job of constant stimulus, a job where you're dealing with crises every day across this huge country. The idea that you could find that boring and still want the job is just mystifying.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I'm like, are you even doing the job? Like, it's so all encompassing. I remember Stephen Harper being like so incredibly busy working all the time with like huge files in front of his desk. Like, I mean, if you think it's boring, it's probably because you're not doing the job. Like, that makes me think someone else is running the government. I don't know. Let's talk a little bit about this idea of more mail-in ballots, because I mean, you've focused on elections pretty much your entire career, and you know the details are pretty slim about these changes that are going to happen. But when I look at what happened in the United States in 2020, what we saw is a huge increase in mail-in ballots, and it wasn't split evenly amongst the parties. So as we know, Biden voters were nearly twice as likely as Trump voters to vote by mail. So if you look at it, 46% of all voters voted by mail, which is astonishingly high. I mean, this was peak COVID, right? It was the fall of 2020. But only 32% of Trump voters voted by mail-in ballots versus 58% of Biden voters. So obviously the Democrat Party were a lot more effective and efficient at driving out those votes through mail-in ballots, which just leads to all kinds of questions and suspicions about who those folks were. So I think from my perspective, mail-in ballots just make things less clear and less safe. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it depends how the system is run. I think the one caveat on some of those numbers is that a lot of states made themselves solely mail-in ballots in that election. So Oregon, for instance, which is quite a heavily Democratic state that Biden won easily, you could only vote by mail-in ballots. That begins, it was the only option in some Democratic-leaning states was to vote by mail. So there's definitely a skew. And there was definitely sort of a distrust, I think, of the government systems that Trump voters had, that were less likely to put their ballot in the mail and not be sure it ever ended up getting counted. If you put it in the mail, who knows where it goes, was sort of the feeling. We had large numbers of mail-in ballots in various elections in Canada during COVID. It seemed to work reasonably well, but I think we should be cautious. I think I'm a big believer in people voting on election day with a pencil. The system is basically entirely unhackable. And I think that's a very, very good thing. So look, we've had mail-in ballots in this country for a long time for people who are going to be out of town on election day or away for a month or sick or something. And that's okay. But a wholesale expansion of the program for no other reason than it would seem convenient, I think we should just sort of keep our eyes open and make sure that the appropriate safeguards are in place.
Well, and you made an important point there. I don't know if you meant to, but it's called Election Day. It's supposed to be the day that we all come together to vote. so things can happen. Things can change at the last minute. And with that 2020 election, I remember that a lot of people were encouraged to vote in advance, and then some crazy scandal would happen and the top trending thing on Google would be like, how can I change my vote? Or is it too late? Can I re-vote? Or something like that. Like, because they had already mailed in their ballot like 2 months earlier, and then they didn't realize maybe how cognitively declined Joe Biden was or something like that. And they wanted to change. I mean, interesting analysis. But yeah, you're supposed to vote on one day. It's supposed to be election day.
Yeah, I mean, in this country back in the 1800s, elections took place over a matter of weeks, or people had different areas, different polls, and there was lots of days, and there was lots of confusion around it. And the idea of putting everything on election day in one day was actually sort of for democracy. The idea that everybody voting at the same day is less funny games, everybody has the same information, and it's actually a fairer election. And it's really funny when you think that we literally have rules in this country about when the polls can be open on election day. You know, there are different hours in BC and Ontario in order to have the most amount of overlap as possible, so people, you know, can't vote in BC when the election's already been decided back east or something like that. You know, we've gone to this idea of having everybody vote on the same day is enshrined in legislation. It's something that they take a lot of time to take very seriously. And yet now they're saying, well, no, more people should vote, you know, weeks in advance.
Well, it's interesting, Hamish, because speaking of British Columbia, I mean, I grew up in BC, and I remember learning about how there was an election, I don't know exactly which one it was, it might have been Chrétien, or it might have been an older Trudeau, where basically the results were in before polls closed in BC, so nobody bothered to vote in BC, because it's like, well, the election is over, it doesn't matter what we think, and I think that kind of helped fuel a little bit of Western alienation, certainly in BC. But I want to talk to you about polling out in BC, because it seems like there's been a seismic shift in polls. I couldn't believe this when I saw it, which is that there were new polls that were out in the field from March 18th to 19th that showed that the NDP, which is a provincial government, the governing party out there, is still in the lead with 40%. But the second place is no longer what used to be the BC Liberals, are now called the BC United. You can see there in like green, 15%, but basically a new party that no one's ever really heard of, or at least has never had large numbers of support. You can see that the increase is 32% and that the party is polling at 34%. So maybe you could provide some insight. I know we're both originally from BC, although neither of us live there now. But what's happening out west?
Well, you know, you make an interesting point I've never heard of. First of all, this poll's a bit of an outlier compared to other polls that have been out in the field that generally show BC Conservatives and BC United around the same point in the 20s. And look, you're right, the BC Conservatives are a party that has not had a lot of profile for a very, very long time. They've picked up two MLAs of BC United MLAs who have left BC United for a variety of reasons and ended up with the BC Conservatives. But what they do have is a fantastic name. The other thing that poll had was the provincial, sort of the federal ballot question, which showed that the Polio Conservatives were at like 49.5% or 50% in British Columbia, which is staggeringly high, in which case they'd win all but three or four seats in the province probably. So what people are hearing, people, you know, don't know what BC United is. It used to be called the BC Liberal Party, which is also probably not a great name these days. And BC United's still a new name. And then they hear conservative and they go, well, yeah, I like the Polyev guy. Maybe I like these guys provincially. So I think they're profiting from having a really, really good name. But they're a very small party that doesn't have a lot of resources. And, you know, we'll see how that translates in the actual election. But also, this poll seems pretty out of step with most of the other polls that we've seen. We've certainly seen polls with the BC Conservatives in second place in the last 6 months, but they've been sort of at, you know, 24%, and the NDP has been at 44% kind of thing. So this part of big jump in the last few weeks, it doesn't really line up with what we're seeing from the other pollsters.
So does it look like the NDP will win another election? I'm not even sure when the next election is.
Well, I know the election's in October.
In October.
And, you know, it's been true in BC for the better part of 100 years, which is when the right is split, the NDP win. So if unless there's some sort of consolidation, the NDP is going to have a much easier go of it. But, you know, the other thing that's happening is that, you know, the NDP has been in power for 8 years now. They're getting pretty shop-worn. The stories that are coming out of BC in healthcare, which is supposed to be the NDP's great strength, are just unbelievably appalling, just horrific stories people being people having spending 2 weeks in hallway medicine in a hospital, getting seniors getting discharged to bus stops in the middle of the night. It's just unbelievable horror stories. And everybody I speak to in BC has got some sort of terrible healthcare story. So the NDP is certainly weak. Whether it's BC United or BC Conservatives, I think BC United's got more horsepower in terms of institutional resources. The NDP can be certainly damaged, but they've got a big structural advantage right now.
Well, it's interesting because in Alberta, the two parties did merge and they became the Alberta United Party. And here it's called the BC United Party, but they don't seem to be very united. So, if they hand another election victory to the NDP, I think that'll be a huge mistake for the parties for not finding a way to get along. Hamish, I wanted to ask, so I had you on in December right before New Year's, and I asked, will there be an election 2024? You said no, and I think that you left a lot of the viewers and myself included a little bit dismayed by that answer, because I think we all just want an election. We want to see Pierre Poilievre in action. The stories that I talked about off the top of the show are all about potentially 18 months until an election, no election anytime soon. Final question, do you still hold up that same prediction or that same idea that we're not going to have an election until the very last minute?
Unfortunately, I mean, the Liberals might be very bad at running the country, but they're not suicidal. And there's no universe where Justin Trudeau, when he's 20 points behind, is going to call an election. So I think we're going to have an election in the fall of 2025.
Well, what about Jagmeet Singh, though? We were looking it up, and apparently his pension vests, or whatever you want to call it, his full pension kicks in February of 2025. So I figure, hey, anytime after that, maybe the guy will be willing to grow a spine and call an election. What do you think from the NDP?
Look, I think the most likely scenario is that in about a year from now, the NDP is going to want to try to separate themselves from the Liberals in order to say they actually weren't doing what we all know they did, which is prop up the Liberals all this time. And they are going to manufacture some sort of left-wing demand, I don't know what, where they will say, you know, we demand X or Y, and unless the Liberals give it to us, we're going to, you know, withdraw from the agreement in advance of the budget in the spring of 2025. So maybe the election will be a year, there'll be some sort of manufactured crisis about a year from now, and in the budget itself or in the fallout from it, there would be some sort of vote that the NDP would vote against the Liberals and cause an election. But everything we've seen from the NDP for the last decade is that they're actually not very competent at coming up with strategies that help themselves. So I don't expect them to implement something like that. So I still think, all things being equal, the fall of 2025 is the most likely time.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear that, although I think you're completely correct that they're not very good at coming up with these. I mean, that was what PharmaCare was supposed to be. That's what I think what this whole Gaza resolution was supposed to be about. But NDP don't seem very good at even following out their own, whatever they're trying to do right now. Well, Hamish Marshall, thanks as always for the wonderful insights. This is Hamish Marshall from One Persuades. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show.